God.
Is that right?
Sure, yeah. If you've got any questions.
You said that we all have an image of the Buddha. What did you mean by that? That it's there in everybody, or it's put there?
Well, you know, just as long as you've heard the word, or you've got the idea, there's some kind of idea or image in your mind.
You have to get the idea first.
Well, I don't know. I imagine you would, yeah. You'd have to have the idea first, yeah, I guess so. Do you know what I mean by that?
No, I wasn't sure what you meant by we all have an image of the Buddha.
Well,
in us.
It's a bit of a difficult thing to talk about because, like, I've got an image in my mind of the French president. Have you? You know what I mean? You've got an image in your mind of him, you know what I mean?
Suppose.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, we all have an image of these ideas in our mind.
I thought you were suggesting that we are born with this image.
No, I wasn't suggesting that. No. There are these influences in our mind that have come in through our having made contact with them in some way or other, and these images. They've got a life of their own in some way. It's very interesting to look into that.
What would you say to someone that is having a lot of difficulties with the metta-bhavana practice?
Well, it depends what the difficulties are.
Well, I just can't do it. It's so simple. But I mean, you know, when I got taught, I was meditating in this center. I thought it was quite powerful and interesting. But then I've kind of sort of settled for a mindfulness of breathing, and I was stuck there, which is fine.
Maybe it'll come later on. I think you should keep trying it, because sometimes, even though something's difficult, or even seemingly impossibly difficult, you just keep having a little go at it now and again. And I think probably it will come in time. Yeah, because it is only about friendliness. You know, you obviously experience friendliness, so there must be a way for you to somehow draw that out and deepen that. There must be a way to do it. It's just that there's something about the way that the practice is coming to you now that kind of doesn't work somehow. But I think you get through that. Yeah.
You mentioned a few other different types of meditation, including the one about the earth.
The six element practice, yeah.
I wondered where one can come across that and do that, because that sounded very interesting, actually.
Well, you can read about it in books. It's called the six element practice.
The six.
Element. It's a bit like the scientific elements, but these are kind of ancient, kind of pagan elements. There's a bit about it in my book, which is now out of print.
There are quite good things online, actually. Practice that, and they're dead meditations as well. So
we did bring up the fact that we don't do this much at the centre.
It's not usually. You know, most of the teaching meditation practices that go on are most Sri Ratna community centres.
Just kind of a blanket assumption that everyone needs
those more. Well, it's a bit of a pyramid, really. Yeah. It's a bit of a pyramid. You've got the stuff at the base, the basic things. And sometimes you get in a situation where you've really got those basic things well established, and you can take it a bit further. But there's nothing wrong with being mindful of the elements, you know, being mindful of your body. You're already in the elements, basically. You know, that's what we are, in a sense. It's really about that, essentially.
Yeah. Do you think about experimenting with different types of meditations, just like having a one-off evening? Try a few different things, maybe?
Life's too short.
What I meant, I think really smart ass. I didn't mean to be. What I meant was that if you're going to fit in, your mindfulness of breathing, and a bit better father, and then do all the other things you have to do in the day. For me, anyway, it would be a distraction.
I think this is a powerful argument. If you take on too much variety, you can lose touch with the important things. But at the same time, there's a spice, isn't there, that comes with a bit of variety. So I think it's not a bad idea sometimes just to look at other things and explore them a little bit. Yeah, but don't lose touch with the important things. Because as I said before, if there's no integrity, there's nothing to hold the experience. You need something to hold it somehow.
Yeah.
That's really important. Yeah.
When we did it, there were over six of us doing it downstairs. Aramanda did it with us. We all really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Meditating, I don't know, 6 years or something. It was really powerful. We really enjoyed it because, as you said, a bit of variety after 6 years doing two meditations. I kind of felt that you just can't do it there. I don't necessarily want to do it.
Yeah.
Every week. But it was
had a really, we all had a really amazing sort of,
because it was just different.
Yeah.
We found it quite good for our concentration.
It's an aspect of mindfulness practice. In the teaching of Satipatthana, the Buddha talks about these different aspects of mindfulness. And when he goes into mindfulness of the body, he talks in terms of the six elements, or the four elements actually, but four elements being earth, water, fire and air.
Yeah. It does happen in meditation,
you
need to calm down.
Meditation. Well, this is something I don't know about because I'm new around here. Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
That's what we did on Tuesday. So any more questions about anything to do with the talk?
Can you talk a little bit more about the vertical integration?
It's a bit mysterious, isn't it? So what do you what? I always hate this question when I say talk a bit more about it.
And I don't want to say give you a couple of examples.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
but you know,
I kind of gave her this kind of rather pat little definition, which was. It's integrating with stuff coming up from the unconscious mind. You're doing the practice. You may be doing the mindfulness of breathing practice. You may be on a retreat, and there's just a quality to your experience which is like it never was before. Somehow there are kind of new elements sort of coming into your mind. It might be a bit visionary, or and it can be after the meditation as well, not necessarily during the meditation. You just get in contact with areas of your mind that just really aren't normally there, and it's an enrichment. It's not something weird necessarily, or it may be a bit unusual, but it feels richer. That's the quality. It's more colourful somehow, and I'd say that's a characteristic of the vertical integration.
Because you also spoke of it within the context of the flowering of the imagination.
Yes.
Using the word imagination.
Yeah.
In that part of the talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something about that other faculty, the imaginal faculty, which in itself is somewhat mysterious, but it's that for me. It's that aspect of ourselves which kind of helps me to takes me out of that narrow, defined sense of self.
It's a good connection. It's the whole thing of the imagination. What's happening when we imagine things? You know, what's happening when our imagination gets going? It's just something a bit amazing, you know, a bit magical. And I think that's again a quality of this sort of more vertical integration. But you just contrast it with the horizontal integration, where you're just a bit more, you're more efficient, you're more effective, you're more kind of on the ball, in the centre of things, sort of thing.
Can you talk a little bit about the? Sorry,
that's okay. I've got over it now. Yeah.
On the horizontal integration.
Yeah.
Presumably, that involves a lot of sort of more daily life type activities, and is there maybe what are the ways to carry the sort of the meditative consciousness awareness practices into day, you know,
I think mindfulness is the key. Mindfulness practice is the key. I don't mean mindfulness of breathing practice, but I do also mean mindfulness of breathing practice. But I'm just talking about trying to be aware, you know, of your body. Body awareness is really helpful, and just remembering, you know, just remembering the practice is often enough to bring mindfulness into any situation. You just remember that you're there. You know, that's almost enough very often. Because very often the way we're relating to our lives is not like that. We're just too... It's almost like being in a dream sometimes. And this is more like just remembering yourself, if you like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so would you say there's kind of a parallel between, or you know, sort of a continuity... Both in terms of awareness and also in terms of metta, you know, and sort of daily interactions as well, and sort of the inner development and the outer,
presence
with others or with
I think metta is actually a bit of a key as well. There's something about metta, the quality of metta, that connects. And there's something about when we're in an unaware, unmindful state, there's an aspect of being disconnected. And I think disconnection is a big feature of our society somehow. It's almost designed to kind of cut people off a bit somehow. And so I think metta is a good kind of glue, if you like, or not glue, a good connector to ourselves, if you like. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about the horizontal.
Yeah.
I suppose for me it also has that aspect of my kind of different sort of volitions, you know, the different things that I might. On the doing those, you know, those kind of internal conflicts get resolved. So there's more of me behind what I'm doing rather than part of me wants to be doing something else or is dissociated, as you're saying. Yeah, so the horizontal also has that aspect of just bringing me more into what I'm doing right here, right now. And for me, yeah, there's a strong kind of psychological aspect of that, kind of resolving conflict and, you know, sense of self-worth, which also has that connection with the matter practice.
I do think that the precepts or the morality or whatever with the meditation come together in a very tangible way, because at the moment I have quite bad meditations, taking it in isolation.
Yeah,
but it's no problem for me sticking with it.
Yeah,
because I just get this sense of contentment.
Yeah,
and this sounds incredibly pharisaical, but I just feel rather good.
Yeah,
that made me desperate.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
What a nauseous bloke. But I, what I'm trying to say simply is that the morality and the meditation seem to go hand in hand. And I do find myself being more helpful to people I meet, consciously helpful, not waiting for something to happen, but actually being proactive, that's the word, proactively helpful. And the whole thing's tied together, Anna. And I said this to one of my mates, and I said, oh, God, Dave, that's not a bit, you know. But I just, it's just come together, whereas, so much of what you were saying this evening is that, you know, I mean, you might as well start talking about nuclear physics in depth. But there is a gut satisfaction
that keeps you doing it.
That's good, yeah, I think that's true. Thank you.
I think that's the first use of the word pharisaical in this building.
But I do stop, you know, like a guy lying beside the road now. Instead of keeping going.
Okay.
We can count on you to have said quantum physics several times in the end.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask about, because I've been away in this yurt by yourself in Wales for a long time. I imagine you've done extensive retreats as well, and as I'm sure many of you have. And I just want to talk a bit about the experience of, I guess, living the Buddhist life or meditation when you are by yourself, and like integrating that with, you know, being in London and, you know, having all these ads flash at you, or just the hustle and bustle. And I started reading a book by Jack Kornfield called A Path of the Heart, and this was exactly about this subject. Keeping up with that quality of meditation, or integrating it, and whether there are any advantages even to living this sort of life, being in the city as opposed to being away, you know, having the silence, not having to deal with loads of people and, you know, all that kind of stuff in the country. I don't know if you understand what I mean.
Well, what you mean seems to be rather a big area.
Some wisdom on that. Just how, I guess, like when you go away on a retreat, for instance, I've only done it for three days, a silent retreat. You know, those, what you were talking about, you know, the thunderbolt in the pitch black, or having these kind of insights, they do seem to.
But that could happen in the city. That could happen in the city.
Yeah. I guess it seems a lot more difficult, and like, you know, I feel almost like there are many more obstacles.
Well, you talk about being in the city as though being in the city you couldn't do nothing, because I associate the city with doing lots of things, but you don't actually have to do a lot of things. You can actually, at least for a weekend, for example, just stop and do very little. And I think you create conditions like that, it changes the whole mental state. And I don't think it matters all that much if you're in the city. You do that. So that would be one way of approaching the kind of issues you're raising.
Just, you know, even things like getting on the bus, or like dealing with your work colleagues, that kind of thing. And all the people, and like the smog, the pollution, like all this.
I love it. Yeah.
As I say.
Please come back. I love it. I mean, I like being around lots of people. I'm really enjoying it at the moment. I mean, maybe it's not going to last, but maybe it's just I'm on the rebound, you know. Yeah. But I think that's true to some extent. But at the same time, obviously there are certain things you can take advantage of in the city, yeah.
But I think certain things you can't. I think you can also take advantage of like the intensity of the city. You can have quite an intense practice in the city. I've had that experience in different big cities where the more intense my actual life was and the more intense my meditation was. I mean, I couldn't do it forever, but, you know, it's almost like a permanent thing. So you don't have to be up and
You can be up and...
Yeah.
That's true,
Isn't that kind of like getting away from it all, though? Like, you know, shutting that door behind you?
You don't really know what's going to happen on the city retreat. We could have gone meditate. You'll go down to Piccadilly or something, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Meditate. Oxford Street, you know. Let's go.
More exciting, you know. By the minute.
Let's go down to Oxford Street tomorrow night, you know.
You're brave enough.
But I mean, would there be an advantage in that? I can't see one. Yeah. An assistant, right, for some. Well, you can do that in high. You can do that in the park for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely. We can do that in the park.
Plenty of people do that, probably.
Yeah.
Different times.
Why not? Very good idea. Very good idea. Yeah.
In public.
Why not?
It's self-conscious, basically.
But you know the truth about London is people just don't give a damn. You know, they just don't. They see you and they think, oh, another weirdo, and they just pass on. It's okay.
Well, they don't even see you.
They don't even see you. Yeah.
I think my experience is just, you know, when you see people meditating outside, it's a very heart-opening experience, and I don't think that's just like maybe have some sense of what they're doing. I think most human beings, when they see someone coming into relationship with stillness, that moves us.
No, most people just think they're a freak.
More metabolic.
No, I think that's true. People usually respect it. Yeah. There was a bit of a fashion a few years ago for people going out and sitting in the shopping streets, wasn't there? And they used to do it a lot in Manchester.
Not much else to do in Manchester.
Mostly young guys, I have to say.
It's action, isn't it, as well? It's like
action, yeah.
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 Meditation as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like
peaceful. Yeah, it's a way of doing that, yeah. I'm not keeping any kind of eye on the time. I'm happy to carry on, whatever.
I just wanted to pick up on Ray's question about the image of the Buddha. A couple of, I heard him asking, was this kind of question about, you know, do we have Buddha nature? Is there already?
Ah, now you're talking. Yeah. Is there a spark?
Is there a part of us that already knows that we are somehow pure, whatever word you want to use. But I know that's a kind of, there's a tradition of that way of understanding the spiritual path. Does that fit in at all within the system as you've described?
I don't know where it fits in the system. I'm sure we could fit it in if we wanted to, but I mean, I do believe that in human nature has the potential to go in that direction. So I think you could put it in those terms, in terms of there being some kind of seed of potential there, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like a child has got this amazing potential just to grow, and it just grows, doesn't it? It just becomes this amazing being. So, and surely that potential includes some sort of some potential to become awakened, yeah. Yeah. But it needs to be activated. It's not all going to happen on its own. And if it meets the wrong kind of conditions, you could.